How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible.
Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot, fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day, especially when the season get hectic. I stay waiting on it like receiving a Nets pick. Nothing like the terrible analysts on the TV. So in depth, you might even hear a story on Gigi. So in depth, they might do an hour about the D-League. So in depth, you probably should pay him, but it's a freebie. Yeah, John Corrales and Jay King, locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. So you can miss me with the blah blah. No more Geno time, we watching Jay do the Zaza. Melis.
Hey there, and welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Thank you for making this part of your daily routine. We are here Monday through Friday for you. I am John Corrales, here by myself for the moment, because today is going to be a joint podcast with the Locked On Cavs podcast with Chris Manning. So we're going to talk in a few minutes. I would hope that you subscribe to us, and maybe you should subscribe to them, because if you want to keep tabs on the enemy, that's a great way to do it. Subscribe, rate us both 5 stars. You're going to hear from us about the signing of Andrew Bogut, which Cleveland is about to do, which the Celtics, I guess, almost did, but didn't, because that's how things tend to go lately. And we'll get into some of the matchups, some of what Cleveland's doing, the differences between what the Cavaliers and how they build their team around a superstar like LeBron, and how the Celtics have different options. I will express my opinion on how the Celtics could maybe never make a trade again. Well, not never, but build through the draft with Isaiah Thomas, with Al Horford, with those guys. We'll get into all of that stuff. Rate us 5 stars. Wherever it is that you subscribe to your podcasts. And yeah, that's it. So with all of that being said, let's get right into the show. Bring in our guest, Chris Manning from the Locked On Cavs podcast.
Is that the new iPhone?
Yeah, got it on T-Mobile. Fastest iPhone deserves America's fastest LTE network.
Introducing the amazing iPhone 8. It's the best iPhone yet, now on America's best unlimited network. For a limited time, save up to $300 on the amazing iPhone 8 after 24 monthly bill credits. And now join T-Mobile's iPhone upgrade program for free.
Eligible trade-in and finance agreement required. If you cancel service, you may lose promo credits. Contact us for details. Video at 480p. Small fraction of users over 50 gigs per month may have reduced speed. See store for details.
Let's start by congratulating you on getting Andrew Bogut. The rich get richer, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I was a bit surprised. Kind of what I had understood about the situation was that Boston was sort of in the lead a little bit. But and I thought just they had the ability to offer him sort of more of what they wanted. They could offer him more money, for one. And I feel like there was a more obvious for him than Cleveland. I don't know exactly how much he's going to play right away. And I think him and Chase Fryer sort of one backup center, they're going to alternate depending on the night. So I was a bit surprised. I think it's a good move. I think there's certainly the potential for him to be not that good, but I do think it is the rich getting richer if he is at all marginally helpful.
Yeah, and I'm surprised that there was a perspective out there that he was actually coming to Boston, because I never expected him to come to Boston. I thought that his commitment was to Cleveland early, and that he just kind of opened things up just to do his due diligence. But the lure of going out and beating Golden State and kind of getting a little bit of revenge, I think, was a little too much for him to pass up. So, but his agent did say, as reported in the Boston Globe, that Boston did a great job, and that he hopes that Boston kind of rekindles those talks this summer. So I think it seems like he wants to go get a chance at a ring and beating Golden State, and then going back to Boston next year and actually filling a role. Because I think he really wants to play more basketball. And I agree. I think once Love is back, that he's not going to play.
Yeah, it's pretty easy to see him pushed out of the rotation, right? Like, I think if you're in Cleveland, I could see him not playing that much, and you're going to play Tristan Thompson a lot more at center. But I think it's probably the same case in Boston, too, to an extent, no?
I know. I think he would have played a little bit more in Boston, for sure. At the very least, he would have been a good backup to Amir Johnson. There's even been some kind of talk about, would he start over Amir Johnson? What the Celtics really need is rebounding and rim protection. And yeah. Amir Johnson does a decent enough job, but they need to make sure they have that maybe throughout the entire game, and somehow they could stagger the two of them and at least have a true center out there. That's the theory anyway. And then next year, Amir Johnson is gone, so they'll need somebody. And depending on how they do in free agency or a trade, they'll probably be looking for somebody. So I wouldn't be surprised if they at least talk to him a little bit again, but I don't know. I don't care. I really don't care that he didn't sign here.
Yeah.
I really don't. Like, for the Cleveland fans, I know what Cleveland is better than Boston. Even without Kevin Love, I know that Cleveland would probably beat Boston in a 7-game series. I'm aware of what we need. We're still a player away, or at least a player, maybe two. But we're pretty good, and we can use this to transition into some of the trade deadline talk, where I was okay standing pat as well, because I'm not willing to jeopardize the future to kind of fix a problem for right now, considering that it's probably Cleveland, and considering the moves that Toronto made, I think I'd favor Toronto in a 7-game series against Boston right now, too.
Yeah, I think that's sort of an interesting question. And Toronto's interesting because the Lowry injury to me really is sort of concerning, because if they don't have him, they are not the same team at all. That I think that is just,
right.
Like, there's just no getting around that. He's so important to them. I think DeRozan's like fine in a vacuum. But if you don't have Lowry to give shooting off of him, and you don't have Terrence Ross anymore because they traded him in the Ibaka deal, you lose something there.
Yeah, and I think that without Lowry, obviously it's a game changer. I expect Lowry to come back. They did it now for a reason,
yeah.
to make sure that he's back in time. And we know what the playoffs are like. A first-round series lasts 2.5 weeks, for God's sake. So they've got plenty of time and plenty of firepower to get through the first round. If this doesn't go, even if it takes a little bit longer for this to heal. So the only thing is that it's to a shooting hand, which is, I think, concerning to people in Toronto. But ultimately, they addressed enough, and the Celtics haven't been able to beat Toronto. They down 3-1 in the season series. So they've really struggled against the Raptors. They got no real answer for DeMar DeRozan, especially. The Celtics' backcourt is just not big enough to handle those guys. So even with Avery Bradley, I mean, we threw some size at them with Jaylen Brown, but he's a rookie. And are you going to trust a rookie against DeMar DeRozan in a 7-game series in the playoffs? That's just too much to ask. So the Celtics could win, but I think, and especially if they're fully healthy, I think that Toronto probably would win that series in 7 games. Even if the Celtics had home court, I wouldn't be surprised if that's how it went. So I'm fine. I was fine. I know that they pursued Paul George. I know that they pursued Jimmy Butler. I know that they have the picks, the Celtics do. They have the players. They could have thrown Godfather offers at either team and pried one of those guys away. But at what cost is always my thing. Would they have jeopardized their entire future for being a contender now for the next 3 years? Does that make the most sense to do it now like that? And does Jimmy Butler put them over the top? Paul George? I think Paul George does more than Butler, but you still there are still holes to fill in that on that roster. And I would rather figure it out and see if maybe that pick comes in at number one. Maybe it's more valuable, and we don't have to give up. There was that report that the Celtics had to give up 4 of their top players. It's a
Smart, Bradley, Brown, and Jay Crowder. Well, maybe if that number one pick comes in, they want two of those players. And you can keep two of those players, and now you feel better about giving up some of those guys in a trade, and you can still keep enough of those future picks to continue building down the road. So I like the patience. I'm okay with it. I never expected a trade to be made at the deadline. I think it's fine. I'll let Cleveland and Golden State duke it out again, and whatever happens, happens. At that point, I could care less. I'm starting to hate both teams anyway. So whatever. you guys can go fight it.
No, I mean, that's a very understandable position. Like, if I was in your shoes, I think I'd feel the same way. And I'm going to admit that I was thinking differently at the time, but the more I've thought about trade deadline, I keep coming back to this line, and I'm not sure if you saw this, that Paul Flannery wrote at SB Nation, that he said the Celtics timeline is LeBron. Because it's like, if you get Paul George, if you get Jimmy Butler, they're really going to help. And I think they probably could maybe get them. It's still like, it's not like they can't get one of those guys this summer, and maybe at a lower price. But like, do you want to go all in on right now and give up that Nets pick? Give up what is it? Probably going to be a top two pick, a 50% chance of being a top two pick, getting a Lonzo Ball, getting a Markelle Fultz. You can do all this stuff with those picks still, and you can still deal again in the summer. Are you going to go in right now when you could do it again in the summer? And if Jimmy Butler gets really unhappy in Chicago, maybe you can get him at a lower price. I mean, not saying that the players are comparable, the situations are necessarily going to be comparable. But look what happened with what the Kings got, like, nothing for DeMarcus Cousins. And if things just go wrong, or you can just hose them in some way, you can get them for, I mean, you could conceivably get them for a lower price. It's interesting because it's like Boston probably does need that one other guy. So it's like, how do you pick the right moment? Is it ahead of next year? Is it in the middle of next year? Like, when do you do it? I think you probably have to do it at some point. Out of what Boston has in terms of assets, what would you actually be willing to part with? What do you think is most worth parting with to get a guy?
I mean, it depends on who we're getting, but let's say it's Paul George. I mean, I'd give up Crowder. I wouldn't give up Crowder and Jaylen Brown because they play the same position, and I'd like to at least have some depth at that position. I'd be fine giving up one of the guards, Bradley or Smart. Obviously, I think people would more want Marcus Smart at this point because if you give up, if you're the Pacers or the Bulls, wouldn't you be looking for younger talent, younger, cheaper talent that you can rebuild around? If you're getting that pick, that 2017 pick, and Crowder and Smart, well, then, you know, I mean, Crowder's 27, 28. So I'd be surprised. I'm surprised that they want Crowder, honestly. And the problem is that Jaylen Brown over the past week has looked a lot better. He's playing a lot better. We're starting to see some of the promise come out. And now I'm starting to think, like, wait a second. This guy's going to be pretty good. And why would I want to give up a guy who's going to be pretty good? Maybe he next year takes a little bit of a leap. If he's made this much progress already, maybe next year he makes more progress. He's shown the ability to play the two. He's shown the ability to play the three. Maybe you can stretch him and play the four a little bit. He's strong. He's athletic. Why would we want to give that up, actually? So if we can keep that and we can get a marquee player and we can kind of pull Brown off the bench and use him in a very versatile way, then, yeah, it's very tough. It's really very tough. And I will say, honestly, I'm the worst general manager because I get attached to these guys. I see the promise, and I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. I don't want to give that up, you know? So I know, but if you're looking at Paul George, obviously you have to give up a lot. Obviously, because that's your all-in. So I would say, you know, Crowder and Bradley, but that's just me trying to be selfish and hoard young guys. Marcus Smart, his shooting is better. It's not great. It's better. And if he starts making better decisions, which he has to a degree, then I would like that. Avery Bradley, who's going to be coming back as we get ready to play you guys on Wednesday night, is a much more reliable shooter, a much more reliable shooter. But he's 27. And so, you know, it's not old. He's in his prime. But, you know, if you can get that same production from a cheaper, younger guy, then why not go for that? So I'm all over the place on this.
Yeah, no, I mean, no, it's super complicated, right? Like you, because it's like Boston conceivably could be really good right now because Isaiah's in his prime, because you have Al Horford sort of in his prime. You have all these guys that are sort of in their prime, but you got Jaylen Brown who's showing all this promise. You're going to get, if everything about the 2017 draft is true, they're going to get a really, really good player. Like, you get Markelle Fultz, you have an uber-talented guy. You get Lonzo Ball, you have another really, really complicates things because you could conceivably have the next really good Celtics team in with Jaylen Brown and whoever they get in the draft this year as your cornerstones, and Crowder could be a part of that because he's not really old, and Isaiah, because, I mean, Isaiah's, like, not, like, old. I mean, he's in his prime, but he's not, like, old by any stretch of the imagination. So those it's a super complicated thing. Like I think sometimes, as a general rule of thumb, NBA Twitter and Twitter as a whole can be like a little. It's just it can be easier to judge what a team should do ahead of time, as in what like kind of being Twitter GMs. It's harder than it. I think in reality, with everything a GM has to consider, what Danny Ainge considers when he's making a deal, I think it's harder than we probably realize.
Oh, absolutely. Now think about it. How many when we look at the most improved player guys, aren't there always, it's almost always a third year guy who makes the leap. It's, you know, you've got your rookie year and rookies are almost always below average players. There's very rarely a rookie that comes out and it's like, oh wow, he's awesome. They might do some awesome things, but they're mostly, by and large, when you look at their greater body of work, rookies are below average players. Their second year, they start to figure some things out. They figured out the schedule. They understand how to take care of their bodies. Maybe they're starting to eat a little bit better. They become somewhat average. And then those third year players are the ones that take the leap, right? That's generally when you become really good, those really good players, it's that third year. So let's look at year three for Jaylen Brown. Is going to be 29-year-old Isaiah Thomas, 29-year-old Jay Crowder, 32-year-old Al Horford. Now, that's second year, let's just say Markelle Fultz. Then the next year, you've got fourth-year Jaylen Brown, who's still on his rookie contract, who's going into his restricted free agency year. Then you've got third-year Markelle Fultz, and now you've got a couple of guys who are in their 30. So at the tail end of their prime, still young enough, but, you know, at the tail end, you've got Al Horford, who's now reached grizzled veteran stage, but his game ages pretty well. He's not really attacking a lot, and I think he's moved further and further away from the basket. So he's already playing an old man game. You've added whatever other pieces you've added. You can theoretically see a scenario where the Celtics keep those picks. You've kept Jaylen Brown. You've kept the 2017 pick. Maybe you keep the 2018 pick because the Nets are going to be horrible next year as well. That's going to be a top five pick. You've got three top five picks. Marcus Smart's a sixth pick. You've got a young core. Isn't that exactly what teams try to put together? Exciting young players with veteran leadership and one kind of old guy. Like, that's the team. That's a championship contender, yeah, right there. So, and that's something that you can build around. Then you'll have to start paying Jaylen Brown and all of that stuff. But that's kind of the formula that teams put together. You put a young nucleus together. You get them some veterans to give them the leadership. And then, you know, a reliable guy. Beyond that, you build a bench of some veteran contracts, some minimum contracts. Boom, done. That's it. So the Celtics could theoretically not make a trade. It'll take longer, but they could do this without making a trade.
100% agree. I mean, it's, and I think what you're hitting on about the youth is something I really critique the Cavs about, because I understand them going for younger guys, for older guys, excuse me, and building the roster that way. Around LeBron, you do have to maximize that window, right? Like,
of course,
James, like, it's not going to be LeBron forever. My thing is, I'm not, and they've attempted to do this to an extent with Jordan McRae, and the Kay Felder thing is, it is what it is. And I think it will be easier for teams like the Cavs, like the LeBron era Heat, like the Clippers, to develop younger guys with two-way contracts next year. That's my theory, at least. But if you look at what they're doing now, they don't have younger guys. Like, if Richard Jefferson suddenly hits that age plateau, it hurts them immensely on the wing. They don't have it. You could plug in DeAndre Liggins, but, you know, there's limits to that as well. He's not quite as big. He's not as good of a shooter. Andrew Bogut, to kind of bring him back into this, he could be washed. I mean, he's been hurt a lot this year, only played in 26 games. He could be trouble. Channing Frye shows signs of age defensively every time he plays. And he's gone through a lot of stuff with in terms of his personal life this year as well. I mean, he had both of his parents die, and you don't have any young replacements in case you need to give him a night off or anything like that. I think it's not always the best example, because I do think he has his limits as a player. But I look at Quinn Cook as this guy who played at Duke, won a national title there, has been one of the best players in the D League for the last year and a half. Got called up by the Mavericks. I look at him in terms of, he's bigger than Kay Felder. He's a better off-ball shooter than Kay Felder. He's a better shooter, period, than Kay Felder. I look at, if you wanted a backup point guard, and not saying that Deron Williams isn't going to be the perfect fit there, because I think there's a good chance he is, but Quinn Cook could have been this guy you have under cost control that's exciting, that has this pedigree, and you could have developed him in Canton last year and then brought him up this year, and it would have cost you less than what they paid to draft Kay Felder. Like, I think teams, even if they're the Cavs, the Clippers, the Warriors, the Celtics, like, whatever, if it's a good team or it's a bad team, I think developing young guys and being able to cost control young guys, like you're hitting on there, I think you have to do it, and I think it's something teams don't do enough. It's my biggest – I think David Griffin is a fantastic GM. It is my biggest critique of him as a GM, and it's not even close.
Well, look, you're right about, you have LeBron, and LeBron's what, 31 now?
31 with the most minutes of anyone to that age.
Right. So you've got a guy that's been essentially going to the NBA Finals for, what, 90% of his career? Yeah.
And it's 32, not 31.
32 now. Okay. Plus international play. Plus, you know, it's a lot. He's played a lot. There's a lot of miles. And he's a freak. He's an absolute freak of nature. I can't believe that he hasn't started to break down and gotten some of this nagging stuff. You know, the tendonitis, the this, the that. But, you know, good for him. However, that's not going to last forever. At some point, playing 100 games per season, because that's what you do when you go to the NBA Finals every damn year of your life. You play 100 games a season. That takes a toll. And especially at LeBron. Look, LeBron, for all of, from the Celtics fan perspective, the histrionics and, you know, the flopping and whining, he does take a beating, and there's a lot of times where he gets hit and they don't call it because he's LeBron and it doesn't look like he got hit. So that's why sometimes I don't blame him for the flops, because when you're that strong and you get fouled and it doesn't look like you get fouled, you have to sell it sometimes. So that's my that's my dirty little secret when it comes to LeBron and the flopping. Sometimes I understand it, but whatever. My official position is that I hate it. But look, you have, as the Cavs, you now have a roster that's, what, $128 million roster? So you sign – yeah. So you sign – Bogut to the minimum. And now, again, from a Celtics fan perspective, I see people say they got Bogut for nothing, they got D. Will for nothing, they got a bunch of these guys for basically nothing. You know, you were gifted Kyle Korver, you know, all of these things. But at the same time, you sign Bogut for the prorated veteran minimum, but you end up paying a tax that's triple what you're paying him. So the prorated amount that they're paying him is like $230,000, but their actual money laid out is going to be closer to $1 million because they're paying all that money in a tax. So, and the Celtics, by the way, as a non-tax team, are going to get a little bit of that money. So thank you for that. So that's another little thing.
Dan Gilbert's mortgage business is out there paying bills. Yeah, but the thing is, like, the Cavs, from what we know based on reports from local business media, they lost $40 million last year,
mm-hmm.
which is like crazy in a lot of ways to think about. Like that they lost. I mean, and like
on paper,
I just, yeah. I would love to know, like, I would like, we'll never see it, but I would like love to see the actual books.
Yeah.
Like, $40 million just seems like quite a bit for what, for how much money is spent at an NBA game and stuff like that. Like, I have $140 million just seems like a very high number for me.
I feel like, yeah. And again, they're paying a lot in the tax, but I'm sure that there's some creative bookkeeping that makes it look worse than it is. I don't think it's that bad. And there's other sources of income that don't go into that operating expense. So I'm sure that they're doing okay. And what are you going to do if you're Dan Gilbert? You're going to sit there and start getting cheap and have the wrath of LeBron, who was just begging for players for months? Like, I don't think you want to be that guy. So they spend their money and they get, I'm sure they get money other ways. They start selling more championship merchandise, something or other, something that gets them money that's not on those books.
Yeah. And Dan Gilbert partially was able to reconcile with LeBron because he told him he wasn't going to spare any expense. And because that was the thing with that, one of the issues that we know of right now, that was an issue with Pat Riley and LeBron, was that Pat Riley didn't want to pay Mike Miller. He didn't want to go into the tax to pay for some of these guys that were essential to those Heat teams. And LeBron, that didn't sit with LeBron, and there's other issues at play there, but that was certainly part of it for them. You know, part of it for LeBron leaving.
Well, the Cavs have set themselves up pretty nicely. They're the defending champs, which is nice. And, you know, Golden State lost tonight to Washington. And, you know, it looks like the Cavs and the Warriors, barring any sort of injury. Now, Kevin Durant did suffer a hyperextended knee. I don't know how bad that is. Even without Durant, they're still going to be the favorites, at least somewhat over San Antonio, but in the East, it's Cleveland and everybody else. I think we know that. Yeah. But on Wednesday night, it's going to be Cleveland and the Boston Celtics. So Cleveland, obviously, the favorite there. Without Kevin Love, but maybe with Andrew Bogut?
He will not. I don't think he's, from my understanding, he will not be making his debut until probably, it could be Saturday in Miami or Monday at home when after they wrap up this three-game road trip. He's not going to, but it is Deron Williams' debut on Wednesday.
Oh, great. Well, that'll help us.
I think if I had to pick one of them actually making an impact, I think Deron Williams makes a much bigger impact.
I just think
he fits in a way at backup point guard that is really intriguing to me, and I'm not really, I just have this bad feeling about Bogut actually being good. I just like the injury stuff with his legs, with everything we sort of know about how Dallas has been for him and the injury he had last year. I just think like a big man over 30 with leg and knee injuries is sort of concerning to me, but he could have just been, I mean, he didn't look like he was playing with a ton of effort with the Mavs anyway.
Yeah, you know, so we'll see how that goes. I still think that it's obviously going to be Cleveland heavily favored, although we get Avery Bradley back, but, you know, that'll at least put some pressure on your backcourt. How's Kyle Korver been for you guys?
Oh, my God, he's been unreal. Kyle Korver has just, like, it's... Like, we all sort of know how good of a shooter he is, right? Like, we all know that this is the guy who has been a great shooter for a long time. And he is kind of dealing with a little bit of a knee thing right now, dating back to that game last week against the Bulls. But this is a guy who is just torching teams from on the arc in Cleveland. He gets open looks that he couldn't even dreamed of, really, in Atlanta. Like, LeBron, by proxy, just creates these looks for him that, it's just him getting open looks at the back end of plays is one of the funnest things to watch with him, because teams just forget he's there, and it makes no sense. Like, why would you lose Kyle Korver? I mean, right now, let's play a little game. What would you guess his 3-point percentage is currently with the Cavaliers?
Well, geez, the way you've been talking, I want to say it's 92%,
but not quite that good.
I'm gonna say it's probably 41%.
51.2%.
Get the hell out of here.
On 5.8 attempts per game. So he's hitting three threes a game. And teams, like, again, they're like, for I don't know why this happens. And I understand, like, it's LeBron and it's Kyrie drawing the attention. But Kyle Korver is just so often sitting in the corner by himself with not a, with no one even near him. And, like, some of that is against bad defensive teams, right? And I think Boston is disciplined enough and is long enough and coached well enough by Brad Stevens to sort of not make some of those mistakes. But it's just, like, you don't need – Kyle just needs that little bit of space. He's been a flamethrower. I mean, like, Richard Jefferson and Channing Frye host this podcast called Road Tripping with RJ and Channing, that they produce, and they literally record it on the plane, and they call him La Flama Blanca, the white flame, because of how well he's been shooting with the Cavs.
What do they call Kyrie Irving?
Oh man. I think they look at him like a little wonky, because of that flat earth thing. They don't actually have a nickname for him, I don't think. But I'm sure the Bogut podcast is going to knock the Kyrie flat earth one out of orbit.
Oh, yeah. So, okay. So you guys are trotting out a starting lineup now of what? Irving, Shumpert, Thompson, LeBron, and what? RJ? Or
RJ has started a bunch. What's Boston's five currently?
Well, with Avery Bradley healthy, they started Avery Bradley with Thomas, Crowder, Horford, and Amir Johnson.
I could see the Cavs going somewhat. I mean, if they got, I think they're probably going to start RJ. Derek Williams has been really useful for them, but they like him coming off the bench. And I think they're probably just going to roll with the RJ. But they have started Channing Frye, too, so I could see Channing Frye getting the start. I think it maybe just depends on the matchup. So if Ty Lue feels he needs to match size, I think you could see Channing, but it could be RJ as well.
Well, yeah, I think the biggest problem the Celtics have is with size. And the question is, if you're going to guard, how are you going to guard Isaiah Thomas? I would assume you put Shumpert on Isaiah Thomas and roll with that. So that's enough to bother him. So that I think would be a pretty good lineup. Then Korver off the bench is going to be a real problem, but at least we've got Marcus Smart to come in and guard him, and maybe I want to say Jaylen Brown, but I don't want a rookie to get he'll get torched. So regardless of that, I think the biggest problem the Celtics are going to have is going to be with Tristan Thompson, because he constantly goes off for 50 rebounds against them. It seems like he's going to probably have four or five putbacks against the Celtics. So that's the biggest problem. That's my biggest concern, is that It's not even LeBron. Like, I know LeBron's going to do his thing, and Crowder can check him and maybe keep him, you know, force him to take some jumpers, more jumpers than usual. But it's that knowledge, I think, when you're playing the Celtics, I think LeBron could feel comfortable taking jumpers knowing that Thompson's just going to go in there and clean them up. Every missed shot is almost an assist against the Celtics for the Cavaliers. So that's going to be my biggest issue.
Yeah, I think that – I mean, Tristan's he looked very springy, more so than I think we'd see him in a little bit who did they play? In their last game, I think he actually looked
Milwaukee?
Pretty healthy. Yeah, against Milwaukee. I couldn't even remember. Thank you. It hasn't really been discussed openly, and he actually got kind of mad at Ty Lue for talking about it, but he's had some tendonitis in his knee that I think is starting to heal. Like, he's looked a little bit more bouncy in the past couple of weeks. So that's certainly positive for him. And I think the rebounding thing with Boston is sort of where I think the Cavs have that advantage, just because, I mean, you know, this Boston probably needs, they could really, really use a rebounder, but Kevin Love not being out, like, Kevin Love isn't the springiest rebounder. He doesn't jump very much really. And Thompson's the guy who gobbles up boards. But if you have lineups there where the Cavs use this thing, I don't know if you've seen this, where they go really big in the second quarter, and it's RJ, LeBron James, Derek Williams, Channing Frye, and then it could be Shumpert, or it could be somebody else. It could be Deron Williams. But it's typically guys that are all like 6'3 or above, and it's a longer on a Korver. Korver is another guy's under, so they can be even like 6'4, 6'5 and above, or 6'6 and above, I think. When they have that lineup, if it's not Tristan at center, which it's most often Channing, they're not as good of a rebounding lineup. And I think that could be an area where Boston, because of their versatility, could really switch really well with that. And they're not going to get as beat up on the boards as they might be if Tristan's playing, you know, 30, 35 minutes.
Yeah. The biggest problem, what I would like is to just not get torched on the boards. I understand that they're never going to really out-rebound a lot of teams, but the Celtics have out-rebounded teams and lost. The rebounding numbers are overrated, in my opinion. That you can look back historically, and there's some pretty bad rebounding teams that are play pretty well, that do pretty well and succeed 100%. And win championships. So, but the Celtics have, on their worst days, this really bad. It's not like they're even just giving up a ton of rebounds. They give up putbacks, and they give them up to guards a lot that swoop in. A lot of guys just turn and look, and that's what bothers me. It's not that they're always a terrible rebounding team. It's that sometimes they're an unwilling rebounding team. So if they could just avoid some of those putbacks, even if it's a long rebound and they just play 20 more seconds of defense, that's better than the putbacks. I'm tired of those putbacks. So all of that said, I'm still anticipating the Celtics to go and probably lose that game. I can't expect them to go and win after the way they've been playing, especially. But maybe there's something. If the Celtics are going to beat the Cavaliers, what will it take short of LeBron not playing?
I think you need to shoot well. I think you need to get the Cavs scrambling on the defensive end. To be honest, they've been great on offense in the month of December. They were 9-2 that month. Even with that bad game against the Bulls, the Cavs had the best defensive rating or offensive rating in the league, excuse me, by like 3 points over the Warriors in that over that month. They've been on fire on offense, but they were a bottom third defensive team by defense if you're looking at defensive rating. I think if you can do enough to pester them on offense, you can make them really work on defense, you can beat this team. Because I don't think they're necessarily playing 100% locked in at the moment. I don't think you're seeing them completely tightened up. And I think Boston has guys that can really attack the Cavs. Like Isaiah could have a really, really big game, because I think Shump is an overrated defender. And if he's getting defended by Kyrie, that's a good thing for Boston.
All right, I will take that. The Celtics shot terribly, though. They shot so horribly in the last game. They shot 40% overall. No, less than 40% overall against the Hawks. So if they can get their act together, that'd be great. What's the Cavs' schedule look like? Is there a possibility they could overlook the Celtics here? I doubt it. It's a national TV game, but they don't have a back-to-back. They play at Atlanta on Friday. Miami's still on Saturday. So it's, nope. I think they're going to have the Cavs' full attention. So, all right.
Yeah. Kyrie did call this game sort of a tone setter for the. They have a month because there's the MAC tournament in Cleveland. The Mid-American Conference tournament takes place at the Q. So the Cavs have to be out of there for basically 5 days. March every year, there's sort of a road trip this time of year. It's a West Coast trip this year, but they start off this month playing a three-game road trip, Boston, Atlanta, Miami. And then they go home to play Miami, but they only play four home games the whole month. So this is sort of a month for them to kind of do that stuff and figure stuff out and get used to playing on the road, because they're going to be on the road a decent amount during the playoffs, because that's the nature of it. And I kind of think the Boston game, and tell me if I'm wrong, could have a pretty big kind of playoff-y environment, because it's two really good teams. It's in Boston. It's a national TV game. I'm pretty excited to see how it sort of plays out, because I think it could be one of the more memorable late season regular games that we're going to see. I'm pretty excited about that.
I hope so. I'm a little bit down. I'll admit I'm a little bit on the negative side, because they've just looked so bad after the All-Star break. You know, they barely beat Detroit. They lost. Who did they lose to? They lost to the Hawks. And then they got blown out a couple of games ago. I'm totally drawing a blank, but whatever. The Raptors. They lost to the Raptors. They barely beat the Pistons. They got blown out by the Hawks. So there it is. And then before the All-Star break, they lost a game to the Bulls that was just a heartbreaker. So things aren't going well for the Celtics right now. They lead the division, but they're second in the East, but Washington won tonight, so they and Toronto are just a couple of games behind. Now, Toronto and Washington play each other, so that's going to be nice. Maybe they can kind of stall a little bit. But the Celtics, if they can beat Cleveland, that will make up for one of these losses. So that'll be huge. I'm hoping that they can kind of get their act together. It's possible. I'm not going to sit there and say it's a guaranteed loss, but it's hard to predict a win against the Cavaliers because they're the best team in the East. And so even without Kevin Love, the Celtics struggle, and that's that.
Yeah, I think that's more than fair, and I think that's I'm excited about that. I find Boston to be a fascinating team. I think, you know, have all that. It's just that Brad Stevens is a really good coach. I just want to ask you one thing before we get out of here. Isaiah Thomas has obviously been sensational this year. Is he playing at that same level that we've seen him play this year currently? Is he still just torching guys all the time?
No. He's struggled a little bit. He's come back down to earth just a tiny bit. I think that he's been defended a lot more by bigger guys. He's being blitzed a little bit more. They're just throwing more size, being more physical with him. And so it's been a little bit more of a struggle. And the big storyline for us right now is how do you relieve the pressure on Isaiah Thomas? And the Celtics have to find a way to get Al Horford more involved in the offense, which is not necessarily his forte. This is kind of what we should have expected, that he's much more of a do-it-all kind of player and that there are going to be some lulls in his game. But they have to figure out a way when Isaiah is double teamed, especially off pick and rolls, that when he swings it, that you're going to be able to find a guy that can make a shot and is willing to take a shot. So I think right now the Celtics are kind of rediscovering themselves, and they have to reintegrate Avery Bradley, who's been their second best scorer for the season. He's back off the Achilles injury. So if they can figure that out, if guys like Jay Crowder, Al Horford, Avery Bradley, Kelly Olynyk off the bench can be more aggressive types of players and not necessarily looking to Isaiah to do everything, then that will open things up for Isaiah to start doing everything again. So it's this little cycle for the Celtics that they play well and they run a nice, tight offense. And within that framework, Isaiah can go off. And then sometimes they forget that that's how they got Isaiah to go off, and they just hand him the ball and they say, go do it again. But when the entire defense is focused on him, they can stop him. So it's just a matter of getting back to running full sets, running Isaiah off the ball sometimes, and not just giving him the ball at half court and setting a pick and having him do something. A lot of times he's most successful when he's off the ball, running off some screens, kind of, you know, just running just different kinds of sets. So right now, the past few games, he's not been. And hopefully he can get back to that pretty damn soon because we need it.
Yeah, I mean, he of course, is what makes Boston go. So that's, I mean, I'm very excited to see how they kind of do this. I want to see how the Cavs defend him because I think that's going to be really interesting because Amon Shumpert cannot play the whole game. And he's not going to chase him around the whole time, so when he's out of the game, do they play DeAndre Liggins to go after Isaiah? Does LeBron go against him? Because Korver's not going to defend him, and Korver's kind of been the two in a lot of instances instead of Shumpert, at least of late, especially because there is no J.R. Smith to turn to.
Yeah, so, all right. Well, we'll see what happens Wednesday night. ESPN.
Wednesday night, big game. I mean, it's a pretty big regular season game. I'm very excited to kind of see how this goes.
I'm very hopeful. I'm excited, too, that this is going to be big. This is going to be big. And, it, you know, for a Wednesday night game, it's going to be awesome to watch. So, all right, Chris, thanks a lot, man.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, lots of good stuff there. Thanks again to Chris. I think it's really interesting to think that the Cavaliers, first of all, we're all kind of worried about Andrew Bogut, and I can't believe they got him. And he's sitting there saying, well, maybe we'll use him, maybe we won't. And I think it's entirely possible that he will get there and not play, and all he wants to do is beat the Golden State Warriors. The Celtics, by the way, are now, like I said earlier in the thing, they're just two games up on Toronto and on Washington. And now Washington and Toronto play each other a couple of times. They have a home-and-home series. If they can kind of beat each other and the Celtics can find a way to string some wins together, then maybe they can just hold on to that lead. It's a tight one, and if the Celtics can somehow beat the Cavaliers, that would be amazing. It would be great. I would love it. We'll see what happens. So, again, thanks to Chris. Check out the Locked On Cavs podcast. They do great stuff over there as well. And you should subscribe. You should subscribe to everybody on the Locked On Podcast Network just in case you want to check in on an opponent. We've got the Lakers coming up. The Locked On Lakers podcast is great. And so check them out. It's a great way to kind of keep tabs on everybody. But if you're not a subscriber of ours, please subscribe to us because we are here Monday through Friday just for you when you go to the gym, when you're going home or to work, wherever it is, whatever it is that you're doing, we will be there for you. We will be there after the Cavs game. It'll be me. It'll be Sam Packard talking post-game about hopefully the Celtics win. And then Jay King will be back for the Thursday/Friday morning show. So lots to get to. I'm not too worried about the Bogut stuff. I'm not too worried about where the Celtics are going. I think they're going to be fine. Things will be fine. And so let's just breathe and relax. And hope you enjoyed that show. This has been the Locked On Celtics Podcast. We are part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Yeah, Jay King and John Corrales.